Quick Takes.
Hello and welcome to another Quick Take episode of B-Movie Mania. I'm here, your host, Michael Hayes, and with me as always is, Wait, John Nix is here. This isn't the normal B-Movie boys.
Hi.
Hi, John. What's up, buddy?
Nothing much. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Of course. I'm going to pretend this wasn't planned. You've just been stuck in the ether since Hologram Man.
Yeah. I'm finally back in human form and trying to get something done.
We finally got you that plastic mold reconstruction to get you your body back. Sorry about that.
It's fine.
It's fine. Whatever. So we watched a movie called Punk Vacation, which we're going to get into here. But first, right off the top, I wanted to also talk to you about something you have been working on for quite a while.
Yeah. We have a new documentary that we're just getting finished up. It's called Don't Fall in Love with Yourself. It's a documentary that follows the life of Justin Pearson, who's a pretty notable underground music figure from San Diego. We've been working on it for about 2 years, and we're about to launch a Kickstarter to get finishing funds for it.
Holy shit, sweet. So it's following the life of Justin Pearson and just what he has done and the impact he's had on the music scene?
Yeah. I mean, it's a character documentary, so it's about his personal life, his childhood, which is pretty fucked up. And it's about his contributions to the music scene, specifically the San Diego punk scene, which is a super weird scene that's produced a lot of really interesting bands like Blood Brothers and Mars Volta and a lot of other really cool stuff. There's a lot of weird like genre blending out there, a lot of like jazz and math rock and punk like all fused together into this like weird, like super challenging slurry.
Wow. Shit. Like, I know some of those bands, but I do not know all of those bands, and I'm very intrigued by some of these other this description here is right up my freaking alley. I like a good mess and a good mess in a mix. So your Kickstarter started just recently, and it's going to go for another, you know, they usually run about a month or something like that, right? So the month of February into a little bit into March, right?
Yep.
Okay, so if someone wanted to find it and check out and see what, you know, other information they have on there and check out some more stuff, I'm sure they could probably, like, search for it on Kickstarter, right?
Yeah. I would just say go on Kickstarter and search for Don't Fall in Love with Yourself, and it should probably pop right up underneath the film section.
Hell yeah. I'll make sure there's a link, listener, out there in the body of the post here, too. So if you went out for Retta Reeves and can't type the six words of that, I'll have a link for you to click on. But in the meantime, why don't we talk about this punk vacation?
Yeah. I chose this, cause I figured do a punk movie to help, you know, promote a punk documentary. And this is one that I've had on my shelf for a couple years. It's put out by the good people at Vinegar Syndrome. Mm-hmm. So it was either this or Liquid Sky, but, Liquid Sky is super boring. So I figured I'd go with this one. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, all those pictures would make, like, great desktop backgrounds, but it's not... I could barely finish it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this, though, is a nice... I guess it's like a romp almost, like an 80s romp.
Yeah. It's anything but punk. I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like, it's definitely made by a bunch of like LA bros that just saw like a guy in a studded jacket and were like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. I know what punk is, bro, man. it's a revenge story. Cause also the punks are the bad guys. It's a revenge story of, oh my God, dude, this movie is like what I feel inspired John Wick to be a movie. because instead of a cute puppy being killed and sending someone on like a murder spree for revenge, some punk just doesn't get his orange soda. And it just...
Yeah. Well, you said the punks are the villains of this, but honestly, I think soda is, because it opens with a shot of a cop shooting a bunch of Pepsi bottles.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a... I don't. I guess Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, except not quite as silly. Though probably filmed in the same locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are a couple of those locations that look exactly the same. Like, the same field.
Yeah, it's definitely all filmed in, I don't know, Eastern Desert California. That's mm-hmm. just small towns, lots of brush, and I don't know. I don't know why it was out there, but it was. I guess it's probably a cheap location to film.
I would assume, yeah. Avoiding permits.
Yeah. So John, could you set up what happens after the catalyst of this punk rocker, this badass punk rocker, doesn't get his orange soda?
Okay. Well, actually, I would like to back up to the very beginning where you meet the characters, like the family. So the movie opens up with a cop shooting a bunch of pop bottles, and then he drives over to see his girlfriend who works at this, like, her father's Quick Stop, and her dad is weirdly more punk than all the punks in the movie, because he's a small business owner and he hates cops.
Yep. Yeah.
He's supposed to be this hard-nosed, like, old cranky dad character that, like, is worried about his daughter dating men, like, and everyone knows what that archetype is in their head. But the person she's dating is, like, this dweeby, like, goody-two-shoes cop guy, and he's just like, I don't like it. I don't like that you're dating that guy. And he keeps trying to stop her for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's very... you said it all right there. Like, he weirdly is, like, in a lot of that archetype in any other movie, he would be the perfect boyfriend that the dad would trust beyond anyone else, except... not this guy. Not this dweeb cop.
So once the cop leaves, and drops the daughter back off at her house, this weird, like, Ron Howard looking, like, punk dude comes up to a pop machine and gets so pissed off that he can't get his orange soda that the old man has to chase him off the property with a shotgun. And then he comes back and murders him in an awkward way.
There's no orange. I hate cola.
So he chases him off with the gun, and then, like, they're closing up shop. It's him and his younger daughter are there. Mm-hmm. And they have, like, an alarm that keeps going off because it's broken at the shop, and he sends the daughter out to get in the car for whatever reason. And then... while she's out there, a whole gang of punks show up, just as if they were around the corner, just waiting for their buddy to get his orange soda because they know he needs his fix. If he doesn't get it, he's going to be cranky. And he came back cranked.
Yeah. And then they just descend upon this old man and attack him and his younger daughter. And then that's the catalyst for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Orange soda, I guess. This is where I first noticed some of the cinematography that happens in this movie. Because mm-hmm. this is definitely a low-budget flick. It apparently was filmed in 84, or started filming in 84, didn't complete until 87, didn't come out until 90. So it definitely didn't have any sort of greased wheels. It was definitely a slow production. Mm-hmm. But... The scene of this where they murder the dad and they, like, traumatize the daughter is, like, the dad's stuff is, like, there's a gang of punks around him and they're kind of holding him and they're fucking with him a bit. But when they show the daughter, it's this close-up kind of claustrophobic kind of shot. And I'm like, that's an interesting-looking shot, actually, weirdly. And then there's, like, a crane-ish shot almost. Like, it's not a super high crane shot, but there's definitely, like, a bird's-eye kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The camera's moving around. And maybe even, like, I'm like, is there a dolly shot going on? I don't understand what's happening with this production here. Because everything else looks like garbage.
Yeah, there's some good cinematography in it. And the editing is actually pretty interesting at times. It's like, all the hospital stuff that happens, like, 20 minutes into the movie. Weirdly, the DP is, like, the only guy that went on after this movie to do, like, anything else. And he ended up, like, being the DP on, like, Black Sheep and Mean Girls. Like, he's done a lot mm-hmm. of comedy movies. So pretty successful.
Yeah, he at some point was the president of the American Society of Cinematographers.
Like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Like, that's how good he is. I mean, he's got some really good stuff. I don't know if anything on the list I looked at is something that has jumped out at me that's always been like, holy shit, this is amazing at cinematography. But none of it looks like it's bad stuff. Like, it's all very, I'm sure, better than I would even imagine some of this stuff, you know. But it's,
oh, yeah,
but,
for sure.
But holy shit, you know, that's there's a bunch of other stuff that happens throughout the movie that, like, there's some really good pull focus that's going on. There's a lot of stuff that I'm like, that you do not see in a movie that this initially looks like budget and quality wise.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would say that like the best thing it has going for it is its style. It's a really good looking movie, and like the costuming and the makeup is all real cool looking.
Yeah, agreed. Very much agreed. And that's Darren Okada is the cinematographer's name. In case someone's out there yelling, no one's yelling.
real fast to go back to the production schedule of this. I was looking at the special features on the Blu-ray because I own it. And the producer's like only piece of advice after being like a blowhard for like a 40-minute interview just like, make sure you shoot your movie all in one go. You don't spread it out over years. And it's just like, thanks. This is really helpful.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, you've been working on yours for 2 years, right? What's that about, man?
Yeah. In my defense, it's a documentary and you kind of have to wait for things to happen.
Yeah, it's very true. And also, even if you're working on a movie that's a narrative, you got to do what you got to do. Some of the best movies took a long time. Eraserhead took like 7 or 9 years or something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, some people might argue that one's not a great one, but I love it. So.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people would.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have extra respect for that because it's all done with like government grants. Like, he would just write to the government for money and just be like, I need this for my movie. Okay, all the money's gone. I have to wait till the grant comes back up again.
Yeah. Well, these guys didn't have to wait for that, I don't think. They had Okada for him, for their cinematography at least. Okay, so the dad gets murdered with knives, and the younger daughter gets traumatized, and they end up... Oh, no, I guess the sheriff boyfriend, what's his name? Reed, right? Steve.
Sure.
Steve Reed is his name. So he ends up coming back, right, to save the day because he's our hero.
Yeah, because the alarm goes... Yeah, so the alarm goes off, which is already, like, a running gag for the first... Like, the opening segment of the movie. And so he comes back figuring it's just another, like, false alarm. And then finds the man's body and calls in the call, so...
Yeah, but he, like, also runs his car into, like... the punk that didn't get his orange soda, and like that knocks the cop out in his car. He hit like a human body. Not that, I mean, I don't know. It was kind of funny. Cause that puts, then it puts him having to go back. He doesn't know what happened. So he couldn't stop the punks. A little convenient, but so they go to the hospital. They take the dad. He's pronounced dead. The younger daughter is taken there and she seems fine, but like traumatized or whatever. Right. Is she like, not in a coma, right? But she's just not moving.
Like, yeah, she's like catatonic. It's very like Night Living Dead, where she just kind of stops being a character and stares at the wall.
Yeah, we peek in on her once or twice during.
You still good? All right, cool. Bye.
All right, remember her? Oh, she's not gonna add anything else. Don't worry. But so they got the punk guy isn't dead. Billy is his name, the old denim punk. So he's in a hospital under surveillance. And Lisa, who's the girlfriend of the cop, she's our main woman person that, she's trying to get up to something, right? She wants a little revenge right away.
Yeah. Yeah. She, as they gurney in the punk that killed her dad, they stop and there's this ominous like push in as this photographer takes way too many photos of him for the local paper. It goes on for so long. It's like the RoboCop scene where the Ed 209 shoots that guy.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Oh God. And the camera just cuts a bunch of different angles to watch this guy with the camera do his own bunch of angles on it. It's great. It's a bit I bet you they thought was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it feels like it's trying to be.
Yeah. There are some good lines in here though. Like,
yeah.
I felt like the movie overall was a bit slow. Like they should have sped up a little bit. If they wanted to play some of these lines for comedy, they just let them lie a little too low maybe. Cause there's some stuff where like The sheriff's yelling about commies.
I'll tell you what happened out there. One of the finest citizens this town has ever known had his ass murdered out there by them filthy yellow-bellied fascist communist pinkos.
And that was a little slapstick. That was up there a bit when he's like saluting the flag and there's like marching music going on. Like that was up there. But there were some other really good, pretty good lines that I'm not thinking of right now. Mm. That they just played real quite. Oh yeah. There's the line where I forget who even said this, but it says something ever since she joined the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Her dad says that because she's mad. I assume he's mad that his daughter is conservative and dating a cop.
I didn't quite catch the context that probably was, but it's just like almost under his breath. They don't play on it. And it was a really good line.
Yeah. I do love that he's saying it. He also says that line to his younger daughter who has to be like 8.
Yeah. He has no clue.
Yeah.
Chamber of what? So the town is on high alert now that there's a bunch of punks out there that, you know, they're wreaking havoc. They killed one of their, you know, small business owners. The town's mad. They're scared. And they're not really, they're not doing much about it at first, right? Like,
no, they just handcuff the murdering punk to the bed. And have like a security guard who is looking at like very tattered porn in the hallway to protect him.
It's like 4 pages of porn.
And he keeps flipping and it keeps getting more and more deteriorated.
Yeah. Like, just hold on to these 4 pages. I need the rest of the book myself. You use this one. Yeah, it's he's not very effective.
Yeah. When I rewatched this too, it hit me that like all the porn is really weird too, because it's not just like a nudie mag. Like you'd figure like, oh, we're mm-hmm. here, go buy this for $2. Easy prop.
Yeah.
It's like cartoon babes and then like, like mom lingerie.
Yeah.
There are two things that don't feel like would ever be in the same thing right next to each other. And they seem like they'd be harder to find.
Yeah. It's like they still, I doubt Mad Magazine ever had like drawn cartoon nudes or whatever, but it's as if something had that. They tore that out. They're like, oh, that's not enough porn. They're like, well, I got the Macy's catalog. Let's just tear a couple pages out of there. It's fine. Then he crumbles it together and he's got his, you know, security jerk pages, I guess.
Just in a brightly lit hallway.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Who looks at porn? I don't care who you are or what year it was. Who's watching porn in the brightly lit hallways of a hospital?
Yeah, that is just a man with nothing to lose.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they put him on security guard duty. He'll be braver in the moment.
He used to be security guard at like other places, but he still pulled out his porn. Like, nah, 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 you can't do that here. You can't do that here. This is the produce section of the grocery store, man. No. So the hospital is his next stop. So Lisa, she steals, some scissors, right? Because she's going to try to stab or kill Billy. Like, she's ready to get him already. Understandably, they killed her dad, right? So she's pissed. Tries to do that. Kills him. Movie over, right?
No, she's stopped and drug away, and then she asks Steve for help in getting revenge.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot. I thought it ended right then. No, there's more to it. This is act 2 now.
Yeah, finally.
The acts are really obviously like every 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like the 30 minute one is, it's, act 2 starts pretty on the thing. It's like at almost exactly 60 minutes for this hour and a half flick where the third act just kicks in.
Yeah.
It's just very obvious. But so she asks Steve for help and they decide to get his get another cop. I don't know if they're partners or not. If they ever establish if
they have. I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's his partner or if it's just like his buddy who he knows would like get in trouble with him and go do something like off the grid or whatever.
Yeah. Two good old boy cops rogue mission. Ready to do it. Yeah. So they decide to go to this farmhouse that the punks have. No, it's not the farmhouse yet. Shit. What do they do? Remind me. Do you remember?
Lisa decides to somehow she figures out where they're staying, which is in this decrepit cow barn.
And so
she goes over there to try to get revenge on them, and then is easily overpowered because it's an entire gang of punks that are just looming in a barn.
Yeah, she gets a gun, wanders up a hill, gets two of the women punks, brings them back to the barn. They're like, nah. and decide to try to assimilate her, which confused me at this point. Because they're like, why don't we assimilate her? And then it cuts to this thing of someone with blonde hair from behind, like, messing with her hair. And it comes out, and they're like, oh, what? It turns out it's the lead punker, Rambone, this blonde
Ramrod.
Woman. Ramrod, not Rambone. that's a porno that our security guard's reading. But it is Ramrod, and I somehow missed something there. Maybe I looked away at the wrong point, or maybe it's just not very well explained. Or I thought that was the same person.
Yeah, it's not
person.
Clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
My notes in here are like, wait a minute. They just changed the part of her hair. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. No, that's a totally different person.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't help that the protagonist, like the main protagonist and antagonist of the movie look like identical blondes.
Yeah, the only difference is that usually Ramrod has hair done differently, but then just like that, like punk Egyptian-ish makeup and some, you know, some weird stuff. You know, that obvious punk 80s look that all the movies
had.
Yeah, like
the Susie Sue and the Banshees kind of thing.
Yeah. So their plan is a great one. Or her plan. Well, do they all? I don't know. What happens next, John?
So Ramrod is going to go bust Billy out from the hospital where he's being kept by the cops. And so she makes herself up to look like a normie, basically, so she can discreetly get into the hospital to break her friend out. And then it just goes horribly wrong because she gets to the hospital, is noticed immediately by a nurse as she's unhooking the hospital bed arm and trying to fit it out the window like a dog trying to pull a stick through a door.
Yeah, it's a real Abbott and Costello scene.
Yeah. I was really surprised that there wasn't some kind of like slide whistle at that point, since the movie has a lot of weird music cues. Like you said, there's like the Sousa music whenever like the cops yelling about commies are on screen. But then anytime anyone's sneaking around at night, they have like weird offensive ninja music.
Yeah, and there's some like Native American cues because there's a bit of an offensive affinity that the punks have with being Native Americans.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And, I mean, and, you know, not that community is, like, you know, was fully formed at that time or, like, unoffensive. I mean, there were tons of terrible people that affiliated with that. But it's just, like, I feel like this movie doesn't get at all, like, what it's trying to talk about in the way that, like, what they're just, like, weird biker racists. Like this has nothing to do with what this actually is.
Yeah, well that's kind of the problem with like the trope of punks as villains in a lot of movies, right? Like there's shitty people in any community. Not all, just because punks were a lot of the time back then were wanted to be off the grid or just were in need of help that they couldn't get because they were, you know, poor. And stuff, you know, and whether it was a choice or not doesn't make them a bad person. But then the media would shine a light on it as if it were, you know, these evil villains, you know, ruining the world. But
I mean, I feel like if you're going to look for like some interesting punk villains, like Repo Man's like a really good example where like it just ends up being like the three people he hung out with before he got interested in the main girl. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the crime they do is just like hold up liquor stores for like $10 in cash and then they run away haphazardly.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not.
This is like, it's not a good villain.
It's not fucking up a whole town.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, which I guess we should explain. Like, the reason why it's called Punk Vacation, I think, is because all of these LA punks are just in like rural California, not really even wreaking havoc. They're just like looming in a cow barn. And then their one friend goes off and kills an old man.
Yeah, there were a couple lines that I thought they were trying to allude to the vacation part of it. Like at some point someone's like, guess I won't see you till Labor Day or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how any of it fit together. I guess the title might have been the context for them being on vacation.
I think that's the idea. Is like the idea was they were supposed to be going into this rural area to like wreak havoc, but they don't really do anything. they're just kind of like, oh man, our friend fucked up. Okay, I guess we got to bust him out. That didn't work.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is precisely what happens. Though at this point, once Ramrod gets back, they decide. I guess we cut to like the night at the barn, and Lisa is tied down to the ground with rats near her, I guess.
Yeah. And she's in her like bra and panties on like a makeshift cross.
I think it is. Like, they never really give us a good shot of it, I don't think. But definitely her arms are out because there's two rat cages by where the ropes are tied. And I thought she was sneaking out at first. Like, oh, I'm going to get the rats to chew through the rope. Not the case. The rats are just there to just be there. They're just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's supposed to be like that Indiana Jones, like, ooh, kind of thing.
No, I mean, yeah.
The reason why we don't quite know what the intention was there is because that whole scene is more interested in all of them like goth dancing to like a ripoff Cramps song. With like some candles lit.
Yeah, it was, that's what they do. That's what those punks do. I mean, I'm sure there's some.
Yeah, there have to be.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
But so Steve and his other buddy cop come. They sneak up there with shotguns. Everyone has fucking shotguns in this movie. And as far as I understand, shotguns don't shoot all that far, but they keep shooting pretty good distances with these shotguns.
Yeah. Yeah, like 1,000-foot distances.
Yeah, unless they're close and they keep missing in the other case. But this is where we get the, like, they go in, they stop the punks from terrorizing Lisa. Lisa and his buddy cop escape. He threatens the punks. It doesn't work for some reason because he has a shotgun, but there are six of them or something. I don't know. I think he could have had them.
Yeah, probably.
But then we wouldn't get the amazing nighttime chase scene. Which amounts to just basically, I think they filmed a couple different rock outcrops, and each team would peek up over the rock outcrops and shoot a shotgun at the other team, and then they duck back down, and then it would be like, oh, now they ran to another one. It just kept popping up and down with these rock outcrops. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's very whack-a-mole.
Yeah, very good description. And it's just all with shotguns. I don't understand. They keep missing. They're so close.
Those guns are built to not miss.
But you know, what are you gonna do? Is this where Ramrod did get shot with a, like at the nighttime farm spot? Did she get shot that at night?
I don't remember. I don't remember which scene that happens in.
She, either way, at some point she gets shot in the hand with a shotgun. It's just this tiny little hole. I mean, comparatively to what I think a shotgun blast would look like. I've never seen one in person.
Yeah. But,
you know.
I'm pretty sure you look like Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Like the hand would be gone.
This looked like a nice... I mean, the makeup was pretty good, but it was this gross-looking hole, but it was just this one hole in her hand. So, I don't know. Maybe it was more of a stigmata. They wanted to do some sort of a theme with that. Probably not, but... but, you know, who knows? But yeah, so the cops do shoot one of the punks. They kill two of the punks. Because they have a funeral.
I don't know if that scene was in my copy of it.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's pretty interesting in the sense of how they decided to do this, because there's this like ceremony that Ramrod is holding. She's like, we're going to have a funeral for our fallen tribesmen or something. And so they pile this big pile of wood and then they light it on fire. And my brain at this point is going, wait, are they going to do a Viking funeral without the bodies on the fire? Because that is what you usually do. Put the bodies on the pyre, you light it, there's your thing. No, no, no. The filmmakers were thinking ahead because they're like, we can't make it look like that. We can't put a body. We don't have a fake body. So what they did is they have this big bonfire and they did like a forced perspective where they would carry the bodies and then drop them behind the fire. So it looked like they were dropping them on the fire, almost at least. And they did it a couple times. It had to have been intentional in the sense of like, this is how we'll make it look real because we can't show it. So this is as close as we can get. And it was a pretty good idea. It was like this forced perspective look of them dropping the bodies. But yeah,
nice. I don't think that was in my copy.
Yeah. My Amazon Prime copy did.
I know that there was also an aerobic scene that was shot for this that they cut from it.
What?
Because sure, 80s. But like, I just don't know how that would fit into it. So I guess that's probably a better choice to have cut that out.
Probably, yeah. I didn't see any aerobics either. So, yeah, the funeral didn't make much sense either. Like, it was just kind of there. So maybe they just cut it for time or taste. I don't know. Okay, so the cops and Lisa have broken into the safe house of these punks. And so now the punks have decided they gotta defend themselves. Or not even defend themselves, just go fuck up the town, I guess. But they don't do that.
Yeah. They just kind of talk in circles about fucking up the town.
Yeah, yeah. Like, two people gotta go back to LA, so they warn the gang for some reason. And so two people gotta steal a car.
I think that's supposed to be like reinforcements, maybe?
That would make sense. That would make sense. We never saw any reinforcements, unfortunately. Yeah.
And like, whose farm is this?
Yeah.
I just want to know where, like, because it seems like it's an active farm when they're there. So yeah. I'm not sure they hadn't gotten noticed yet. And that, like, how are you going to defend this ground? This is not your property.
Yeah. It really becomes a sort of a Rambo setup for the punks.
Yeah.
They set up traps or. They set up like two traps, but hey, it's two traps. They set them up.
Better than no traps.
It's right. And it, you know, because all the townspeople get together with a posse and they're going to go fuck up the punks.
including an old man with a pith helmet on.
They are.
It's like 12 rednecks and then like a British colonial.
Yes. Oh, yes, there is.
It's like they ran out of camo pants. It's really weird.
Yeah. Well, I got one of these here I can put on. All right.
it'll look like a straw hat from, you know, 100 feet away.
Yeah, it's fine. I think this farm that you speak of had to have been a property that they knew of. Either someone knew about it when they wrote the script, or at least when they chose the location, or they said, let's wander the land we got permission to film on and just pick some spots, because there seems to be no script or structure. Well, there's a little structure, but it seems pretty fucking wild what happens for the last third of this movie in terms of the punks defending their territory and the townspeople trying to get the punks.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see that script because I have no idea how you would even approach this. It's just so scatterbrained.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like one of the traps is like a net, you know. You could write that ahead of time. There's a net. All right. There's another trap that is just a pipe across a ditch that the townsfolk start walking across, these three guys in their group. And then the bald punk comes out with a shotgun and doesn't just try to shoot them or threaten them. He walks out onto the pipe too and like pokes at them with a shotgun. And I personally feel they could not have scripted that. I don't think see that ahead of time.
Yeah, no, I think that they found that pipe and they're like, yeah, okay, well, what can we do with this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, why don't you fall, and then you rack your nuts on the pipe and then fall off. And it'll be great. And then we'll never see you again. You've died.
Again, I feel like it's like another Indiana Jones thing. Like there's like weird Indiana Jones vibes all over the movie where like there's like the gross out rats where it's just like, okay, this is supposed to be like the beginning of Temple of Doom. And now this is like the end of Temple of Doom. And it's just like, we don't have a rickety bridge. We got to find a pipe that they can shimmy across.
Yeah. One of them did shout, "I'll see you in hell."
Molaram, prepare to meet Kali in hell.
So it's a lot like the end of Temple of Doom. You're right. All right. So the townspeople are trying to get him. The punks are setting Home Alone traps. And then how does this all kind of climax, I guess?
Really awkwardly. So they finally like cross all of these like rock faces to finally get to like a road that's carved through the mountain. And then one of the other punk girls brings back a car that expressly is said like it's supposed to be big enough to block the road, and it is definitely not. It's like a Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's a Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah. And then they just have an awkward shootout where Lisa is trying to shoot Ramrod and the other punk girl from the top of the mountain ridge, and then they just like, I think she gets shot, but I can't quite tell because the screen just goes to like a freeze frame and then like a red filter.
it's like Lisa gets shot a little bit, like grazes the arm, then she shoots Ramrod like in the shoulder, and then wait, is that where you saw the red filter, or is it after that when they're driving away?
No, it was when she gets shot.
Okay. Does Ramrod ride away in your version after that?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, there's that thing. I didn't catch, maybe our edit said different. I didn't see that red filter at that point, but definitely when she gets on the bike, at least in the version I saw, and they're riding away, she's on the back of it, and it just like slowly zooms in a bit, then freeze frame, red filter. And wait, is that death? Is that what?
Yeah. But, because they're shooting after them, like it's very like Devil's Rejects, but not coming straight at it. So,
yeah. And this is another shot where I thought the cinematography was kind of great on Lisa up on the hilltop. It's got this like soft focus kind of on her a bit, or at least soft lighting or something going on where it's kind of just slightly blurry, but like in a certainly intentional way, or at least happy accident kind of way. And it looks great compared to, like, she looks almost angelic-ish compared to, you know, the punks down on the ground by the messed up VW, which are really just like, it's a stark contrast in terms of the softness and sharpness of it. It looks pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The entire last sequence looks really great. As far as like the way that it's shot, if it would have had better, like a better structure, it could be actually have been like a pretty rad sequence, I think.
Oh, hell yeah.
But it just kind of goes on for a half hour and it doesn't seem like it knows where it's going.
No, they're like, we got to get you to the top of this hill and the punks down here to a road that all of the other people could have been on, but they're waiting for one cop car to come through.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, hey, you got to get to the means, however you got to get to the means. And that's what happens in movie making sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, that's the movie, apart from this weird long sequence of, what's his name, Jeggy or something like that, trying to get back on a bike because he disappeared for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the nerdy punk is like hitchhiking at the end of the movie. It's very like Hulk, the TV series.
Yeah.
And then a motorcycle guy comes by and picks him up, and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. Like, he leaves with two of the women to steal the car, doesn't come back. And then at the end of the movie, we see him hitchhiking almost as if maybe he wasn't available the day they were filming that scene.
Oh man, people are gonna wonder where he was. We better figure out something for him to do.
Yeah, they like the Ramrod asks the two women, "Where's Jeggy? I can't think of his name. Feggy. His name's Feggy. Where's Feggy?" And they both just go, "I don't know." Just like comically, just shrug and I don't know. Lift their hands up in the air. Oh, he's just out hitchhiking with his rats. That's all. He's fine. Oh man. Shit. Well, is there something we missed at all? Is there something that you wanted to mention with this that we didn't talk about? Cause that's technically the end of the movie.
No, like I think I love the first half, honestly. Like, the first half is so weird and idiosyncratic, yeah. And like, does like, it doesn't, it has that great like B movie quality of like, it, you can tell what it's trying to be, but it's not quite there, and it's confusing in the way that it's off. And that's always the stuff that I look for.
Yes.
So yeah, no, I try to cover all that up front just because I love all that texture. I love her dad. I still think the dad is the best character.
he's great. I agree. Like I think it definitely, and I mentioned before that there's some really good lines that they maybe don't get delivered or edit well enough within the movie, but I think that kind of shows to that they were trying to be really earnest about this revenge story. I don't think they were thinking of it like, let's do a bunch of gags. They were just like, that's just what ended up in the cut. Someone's take on that line, or maybe there were a couple funny ones, but they weren't focusing on that. It was an earnest punk revenge story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like there's definitely, there are humor elements in it, and they always kind of feel a little bit out of place, because I think that it's doing a pretty good job of being a serious movie, and then it kind of undercuts its tone. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably just from them, honestly, probably having fun on set. Like sometimes that just happens where like you lose the tone because there's some kind of like interesting through line that you want to get to, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, maybe someone gets to choose that take gets to stay in because they thought they like it. They're like, it's funny, just keep it in, as if that's the end all. Something's funny, you keep it in the final edit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't do that, you know, maybe choices were made, but, anyway, John, I think we should probably do some ratings.
Rating time.
Okay. Let's do ratings.
Why don't we rate this 1 out of 100? Fascist communist pinkos.
Fascist communist pinkos.
Which is the line the sheriff yells about the punks because he hates them.
Yeah. I'm down. Yeah.
We do, I'll give it.
No. I'm good. I'm good with that.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's see. Since you're the special guest, why don't you go first?
Okay. I'll give it 75 fascist communist pinkos. Because I feel like it's funny because I watched this movie for the first time like a year ago, and I was just like really, really bored by it. I think I was just in the wrong mood, or I was too tired for it. And now I've watched it like 3 more times, and more like I'm really enjoying it. And I think that there's like, I think just like the texture and the weird idiosyncratic kind of stuff in it. I like it a lot. I think that the end is too long. I think it's too sloppy. I think that it kind of just gets bogged down and kind of sleepy in the third act. But otherwise, like, I think that it's a really fun romp before that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've only seen it the one time, but I definitely would like to see it again, especially with some people. I think it would be fun maybe to, there's a lot of me just by myself going like, wait, what the fuck? What? Like, because they choose to do some weird things that, you know, just throughout. And it's kind of, some of it's not awkward, but like, I don't know. It's fun. There's a handful of like, wait, why is this person doing this? Why is she just walking through the mountains all by herself slowly? You know, it's like, there's all a bunch of fun stuff like that. So I definitely want to watch it again. I think I'm going to go 66 fascist communist pinkos. And that rating will probably go up as I watch it more and more. Oh, well, sweet, John. Thank you for suggesting we watch this.
Yeah, thank you for having me on again.
Of course. And I'm waiting with bated breath for this documentary you've got coming out. I mean, I've already jumped over to that Kickstarter, dropped a couple bucks in there. Everyone listening should too, I think. It's called
Don't Fall in Love with Yourself.
And it is a punk documentary about, I'm going to do this weird prompt thing. It's going to be awkward for everybody.
Oh, it's fine. It's about Justin Pearson, 31G, and the San Diego punk scene.
Hell yeah. And so the Kickstarter started February 11th, and it's going to run, 30 days probably?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So check it out. people. You can go to kickstarter.com and search for Don't Fall in Love with Yourself. Or there's a link in the body of on our website that you can click on and it'll bring you right to it. So you don't have to type any of that in. It'll be nice and easy for you. And you can help support independent filmmaking.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah, no, but really, I mean, we would appreciate any kind of support that you could give us. We're really close to having it done. We already have a full length cut of it, but there are still a handful of interviews that we feel are pretty essential to telling the story right. And mm-hmm. so we need some money to fly back out to San Diego and make sure that we hit all those topics and like fully cover them. So that's what the money's going towards. But so it's not like it's starting from scratch. Like it's almost done. It'll be done within a year.
Sweet. So apart from directly being able to follow the film, you have a film production company. You have other stuff. How can people follow you on in that way?
You can follow our film production company, Turnstile Films with a Y, at Turnstile Films on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, all that. And then you can follow me at John Nix Film, JonNixFilm, on Instagram and Twitter.
Hell yeah. Well, sweet. Well, John, thanks again. And good luck with the movie.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. All right, buddy. Goodbye.
Bye.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!